pussle.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just hit a card. Hey everyone, I'm back in charge, bitches. How y'all doing? Welcome to Behind the Screams. I am Ian. I am the host of this podcast one third of the time, apparently now. But yes, welcome to the show. This is episode number 128, and in today's show, we're covering the 2008 movie Martyrs. But I am not alone tonight. I am joined by the rest of the Cackle crew, starting with Lindsay. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm alright. How are you?
I'm fine. You're glad to have me back in charge?
Yeah. Keep it, I don't want it.
We're also joined by Lucy. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Just getting my invoice ready for you for my therapy session after this.
I've actually been kind of looking forward to this. Is like the high, like normally, like I look forward to recording the episodes anyway, but like tonight I've been like, I really, really can't wait to figure out what used to have to say about this film. I'm back in the hosting seat, but I really feel like I'm used to can still dominate this conversation tonight. Before we go any further, because of the subject matter that the movie deals with, I'm going to throw out a trigger warning for anyone who's listening. This, if you haven't seen Martyrs before, or if you've not heard of Martyrs before, this deals with just horrendous themes of abuse, and it's brutal as fuck. So yeah, this is a trigger warning for anyone if you are easily triggered or are triggered by themes of mental health and things like that as well. Then feel free to either just skip past this episode altogether. You probably do that as soon as you heard that I was hosting this one, and you were like, oh fuck, I'm not speaking, I'm not listening to that ball bag. But yeah, just throwing that out there for everyone. So we'll get into the housekeeping and that just now. You can find this show all across social medias. We're on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. Excuse me. If you enjoy what we do and you'd like to give us even more support, you can do so on Patreon. That's patreon.com/behindthescreams. We'll quick shout out our Patreon subscribers in just a moment. You can also find us on Twitch, where we stream a minimum of 4 nights a week. Currently our schedule is Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, streaming a whole variety of horror video games, but keep an eye on our social medias because we do some extra bonus streams in there as well. And we're also on TikTok, and that's where you can find Lindsay's mug, giving you all the interesting horror facts, and she'll be posting the promo clips and things like that there as well. So just search for Behind the Screams on TikTok. And finally, we have completely revamped our Discord server in the past couple of days. I'm still making some alterations and adding some stuff in, but we've completely revamped it. It's now open to everyone, so it's not just for subscribers anymore. It's now open for everyone. Go onto our social medias, go click on our link tree, because you'll find the invite link to our Discord server in there as well. So please, yeah, go join that server. Lindsay, where can people find you on the socials?
I am at @HiIt'sLindsay_ on all social media.
Lucy?
Find me on Twitter and Twitch at @Lulu_Pew.
Nice. When are you streaming?
I'm streaming on Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Been doing like a variety of things right now, so we're still doing our, it's called Dragons and Dranks series now, this Dragon Age series, which has been doing really well. I'm actually going to be doing a cosplay stream of that pretty soon. I've been painting some elf ears, going to be doing a Meryl cosplay, doing some makeup streams. We just finished A Plague Tale: Innocence, which I know is Ian's favourite game of all time.
It's got a child in it, I hate it.
But we just finished that, and we're starting a new game next week called Hellblade. I've never played it before.
Yes, I just downloaded that to play it as well.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Great minds think alike.
Absolutely. I've played a little bit of it. It's pretty fantastic, to be honest with you. I think you're gonna love it. So yeah, check it out, Lucy, on her streams, Lulu_ Pew. Only a couple other pieces of housekeeping that I have before we move on. So as everyone knows, the last Saturday of every month, we do a live show on our Twitch channel with the three of us. Last month we did our Women in Horror show. The month before that we did our LGBTQ plus show. Got all my letters muddled up there. This month we don't really have a theme for this month, so we're going to do a nice little relaxing Ask Us Anything Q&A session with the three of us. So over the course of the next pretty much 2 weeks, we'll be throwing threads up across all of our social medias. That'll be on our Twitter, our Facebook, on our Instagram, it's on our Discord, and you can ask us absolutely anything you want. Bearing in mind though, we do reserve the right to not answer some of the questions depending on what kind of topics you choose, but you can ask us anything you want, and then on that live show we'll try and get through as many of them as we possibly can. So keep an eye out on our social medias. The thread is already up on our Discord. By the time this episode is released, the thread will already be out across all our social medias as well. So please do go and pop us a question. It can be, like I say, about anything you want at all. So that should be interesting. You can also email questions to us as well. That's at behindthescreamspodcast@gmail.com. One other piece of housekeeping, it's just a reminder really for all of our listeners that in the descriptions for every single episode we do now, we don't have them in for all of our episodes yet, but for the past, since I think the turn of the year, we put timestamps in our description for the episode. So if you don't want to hear this chit chat at the beginning, or if you don't for some reason want to hear us actually review the movie, you want to get just straight to the ratings, that's what you want, we have those timestamps in our description, so go check that out as well. And you can jump to the parts of the episode that you want to listen to. Before we move into this episode, I got the guys to do a very, very short quiz earlier today. We've done a few of these over the time, over our time together, but we'll quickly run through this one. So the quiz was just a nice, simple answer, very simple questions, and it reveals in which position in a horror movie you would die. Or not die, if that the case may be. Shall we, what order would you like to do this? Would you like to go from who would die first to who would die last, or shall we just go in any old order?
Yeah, let's do first to last.
Okay, yeah. So, Lucy, when are you dying in a horror movie?
First 5 seconds, bitch. First
to go. You are truly the Drew Barrymore of this podcast.
Indeed.
You are the Judith Myers. What was the lead description? Did you have it up?
Oh yeah, let me get that just now. To be honest, I wasn't surprised. I could admit my own faults.
To be honest, neither was I.
You savage. The description is, you're completely clueless. True. To what's happening around you, and you can't seem to get a grip on life.
True.
That's why you'd better be the first to go if you were in a horror movie. Congrats, I guess.
I mean, it's always good being first.
Yeah. Get it out of the way, I guess.
So, yeah, well done. At least you don't have to suffer throughout an entire movie.
True.
You just get out of the way quick, and then you can be like vengeful spirit.
Oh yeah, I'll haunt all you bitches.
Oh, you would as well. You would as well. Well, I guess I better go next because chronologically, I'm the one who dies next. But I don't die second. I die third. Apparently, I'm third to get the chop. And my description was: you're very strong, true, on the inside and out, true, and very popular too. Not true. You care a lot about what happens about other people. I can't even read, honestly. You care a lot about what other people think, but that's because you have a big heart and just want what's best for everyone. You'd probably die third from a possessed child or something. Congrats. And it would of course be a wee child that would kill me. Little shit.
It's going to be the kid from Plague. He's going to get you with a rat tornado.
Oh. That's all right. I like my ratties.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah.
Let's move on quickly then to the person who survives the longest. I don't think any of us were stunned by this, to be honest. Lindsay, where did you come in the movie? That's how it's...
Lude.
I live until at least the sequel.
Bitch.
My description was like absolute nonsense. I was like, I read it before and I was like, lies, lies. You're amazing and everyone wants to be you. Like, currently I haven't washed for like 3 days and I've got really greasy hair. Nobody wants to be me. You're the favourite child, lies. If you were in a horror movie, the eldest child's never the favourite. facts. If you were in a horror movie, you'd be the only one who makes anything close to resembling a good decision. That bit is probably true. Congrats.
Yeah, I think that part is probably true. I can't see.
Yeah.
I love you, Lucy, but I can't see either of us making any sort of good decisions.
Well, I completely accept that. Lindsay's the only one with common sense on this podcast.
Absolutely. The reason that I brought this one up is because I thought we could probably do with some lightheartedness before we get into this movie discussion, because it's going to be an interesting one. So, are you guys ready?
Yes.
Are you sure? Are you really sure? Okay, we are talking about Martyrs. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Someone in a room with no light, soon they begin to suffer. Then you feed that suffering. Slowly, methodically, systematically, coldly, for a long time. Martyrs are very rare. A true martyr is a special person. They are exceptional beings. They withstand paralyzing pain, young lady. They can survive total deprivation. They carry all the sins of the world.
This movie was released in 2008, written and directed by Pascal Laugier. I'm about to butcher some French people's names, I'm sorry. Stars Moriana Alouy? God, this is terrible. Mylène Yampinoy and Catherine Begin? The IMDb plot is as follows. A young woman's quest for revenge against the people who kidnapped and tormented her as a child leads her and a friend, who is also a victim of child abuse, on a terrifying journey into a living hell of depravity. I've never seen an IMDb plot undersell the level of depravity in a movie in my entire life. Now, when we do our sort of social medias and things like that, There's like a list of movies, isn't there, where a lot of people will either just refuse point blank to watch them, or they just, you know, they're on that list of, oh, that's like pushing the boat out, isn't it, in terms of how fucked up a film is, you know. And you always get things, you know, like Cannibal Holocaust and Human Centipede's on there often as well, but like a Serbian film, Martyrs is often on that list as well. But neither of you two had seen this movie before. So I'm very, very interested to just, before we get into any sort of deep discussion, to get just a brief overall thought on what you thought of the movie. So, Lindsay, do you want to go first?
Like, in terms of it being, like, up there as one of the most, like, fucked up movies, like, ever, like, I don't know if it is for me. It's kind of more that the nihilism that runs through it, the fact that everything that happens in it is meaningless, that is hard to reconcile with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. It's definitely one of the sort of, I think it's actually one of the really important factors in this movie, because I think if you have something to sort of cling to or something to sort of grab hold to in terms of hope and things like that, I don't really think this movie works. I think this movie only works because of the huge amount of nihilism that is in this film. So I'm sure we'll talk more about that. Lucy, what was how did you feel about this when you were watching it?
I'm going to be completely transparent. I was really nervous to watch this, kind of like Eden Lake as well, because as somebody with PTSD, I tend to avoid movies about abuse and stuff like that. But
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I went into it knowing what was going to come. But it was like a roller coaster of emotions. I'll say I've never experienced a movie like this, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, because actually when you get past the gore of it and the depravity, there is actually, it makes you think a lot in terms of religion, in terms of mortality. And I don't think it's torture porn for torture porn's sake. I think there's a lot of discussions that can be had from this. So we'll get into it. I don't know how else to describe it. It was like an experience.
An experience it absolutely is. I'm really interested because obviously you brought up the term torture porn, and this, a lot of people would sort of put this movie in that sort of torture porn category. I think there's so much more to this movie. I don't think this should be in the torture porn category personally. I understand why people put it in there, but you know, torture porn movies tend to be pretty mindless. They tend to not really have that interesting a message to say. And they're obviously all about, you know, the gore and the shock value of it. And whilst this absolutely has that, like you're saying, it has those sorts of underlying messages about religion and, you know, afterlife and all of those sorts of things as well. So I think this is, I think this goes beyond that sort of genre description. This, of course, is a movie that is classed as part of a sort of cinematic movement that's starting to sweep kind of across the entire Europe, but not just in France. It's a New French Extremity. Were you, either of you, familiar with sort of New French Extremity or the movies or what it was sort of all about? Okay, so I'll quickly give a little brief description. I won't go into too much. But New French Extremity is basically horror movies that have transgressive content. It has social and political themes in it, and it really tries to sort of push the boat out in terms of the extremes of what we see on our screens. And it was in response to a rise of right-wing extremism in France that sort of developed throughout the late 20th century and into the 21st century. But obviously, like any other genre, it has its detractors. Some people argue that New French Extremity its sensational nature disqualifies it as a legitimate expression of social, political, and philosophical commentary. I'm directly quoting now, so this isn't just me pulling shit out of my head. But its roots go all the way back to the 1800s as well, through various sort of painters and writers and things like that. The genre influenced directors who were of the belief that contemporary filmmakers lack the power to shock an audience into consciousness. And I think that's quite an important statement, because this film almost does sort of shock you into thinking about something that you maybe weren't thinking about before. And like I said earlier, it's led to a slightly more wider sort of European extremity movement. But movies like Trouble Every Day, Them, High Tension, Frontiers, Inside, Martyrs, and Raw is even included as part of that movement as well. But there is a whole host of other movies, like I say, throughout Europe that come under this sort of new French extremity sort of banner. This movie, like we were all, and obviously I was talking about how I feel that this movie sort of transcends its torture porn tagline, which is quite funny. It's just quite ironic, really, compared to what they're trying to make the girls in this movie sort of transcend. When I was reading up about sort of critics and what they thought about this movie, someone had said that putting the audience through it, and I hate the fact that I've used those air quotes, is the film's raison d'etre. And do you think that, because we were obviously talking a little bit about it there, Lindsay, do you think that this film would have worked had it been slightly more sort of held back, maybe for, I don't know, like a slightly wider audience? Or do you think this film just only works the way it's sort of presented to us?
Yeah, like if you gave a more watered down version, it definitely wouldn't be as good. I think, like, as much as people have it, they're detractors of it. Like, I think cinema absolutely has the right to push boundaries sometimes. And then I think, unfortunately, for some people, like, some of the things in this film, like, not going to go into it, but I could, like, heavily relate to it based on things that I've had to go through in my childhood. These things happen in real life. And if you're scared to push the boundaries, it's almost like covering that up. Like, why should we have to hide the truth because it makes people uncomfortable?
It's I find it really interesting that you're saying, you know, push the boundaries there, but when you actually look at this movie, you know, there's nothing really on screen that you think is really pushing, I personally think that it's really sort of pushing the boundaries of the things that you can show on screen. You know, I listed a couple of movies there, like Cannibal Holocaust and Serbian Movie, and they deal with, you know, themes of paedophilia, and there's real, you know, animal abuse in those movies. Those are things to me that are pushing the boundaries, they're crossing the line. But in this movie, I don't really feel that. But I don't know if it's because I'm just so switched off to religion and the idea of an afterlife that doesn't really have that much of an effect on me, or if you know, it really isn't actually showing anything that shocking. I don't know, Lucy.
I think it's kind of more the absolutely relentless physical abuse. I think it's maybe pushing a boundary, but, you know, go off
then. But you get what I'm saying, you know, in terms of there's no one individual sort of scene in this that you think, oh, fuck, like, they shouldn't be doing that. You know, I don't know. Lucy, what do you think about this?
I'm in an agreement that you're put through the ringer in this. You're put through everything that Lucy and Anna go through. And I think without having that, you wouldn't have the same experience. And I'm not going to make this into a therapy session or anything like that, but, like, actually dealing sometimes with those traumas on screen, if you've dealt with those before, it can be kind of cathartic. Like, I actually cried watching this twice. It was like an emotional release.
You know what, like, sorry to interrupt you, I'm not going to lie to you, I'd seen this movie before, but see, today, I rewatched it again today, and I was a bit weepy by the end. Like, at the end, I had a moment, and I wasn't weepy, like, throughout the entire film, and then it got to the very end, and I found myself, like, with sort of caught in my throat, and a wee tear in my eye. I was just like, oh, I didn't understand.
I think this movie sometimes, like you say, if we actually look at the aspects of it in terms of gore, there isn't really anything in here that we haven't seen before or hasn't, it wouldn't be out of the box to have this in a Saw movie or a Hostel movie, you know, but I think it's the way it deals with things, especially with the child abuse side of things and also mortality. Like, I'm not religious myself at all, but I think everybody is scared of their own mortality. And I think That even if you don't want to, I don't know, that's my own opinion of it. You know, mortality is one of the biggest fears in life, because at the end it's getting a bit deep, but we all do die. Death is a very real thing. So I think the way this movie approaches that, and also just this feels really raw and real, like, especially, you know, the pacing of this, there's no happy moments at all. It's just brutality after brutality. You know, even in the first 15 minutes when we get the scenes at the house and stuff like that with Lucy. I don't know if you guys feel this as well, but it felt real. Like, the acting, the pace, everything just felt so raw, and I think that added to the emotion of it. It just felt like that could have happened and you were really there.
Definitely. I think, like, one of the biggest high points of this film is that the two lead actresses are so good. Their performances are so nuanced. You can feel every single level of emotion and understand it from both of them, because I think, like, if it would be made in, like, the UK or the US, like, they would have made it very one note, and it's like, she's upset, so she's going to kill everyone, and she's a supportive friend, and oh, now she's scared of her, and it's just, like, actually, like, they're in love, and they're scared, and they're angry, and they're frightened, like, all at the same time, and they do that so well.
But happy to tell you that there is a US remake of this, and it's fucking abysmal, so do not recommend you go and watch that show. I know you're stunned that it's terrible, but yes, there is a US remake of this, and it's not good, a good movie. In terms of, like, I don't think I'm really making a sort of out there statement when I say, at least in terms of movies that we've covered on this podcast, I think this could be two of the best performances out of, and that goes for all those amazing movies that we've covered as well. Like you're saying, the performances of these two actresses is mind-blowingly phenomenal. And without those two, for me, like, this movie just doesn't work anywhere near as well. And you're right, you know, this is also, it's, you know, this is, even though this is so, it's so depraved, it's a love story as well. You know, these are two people who are in love with each other. It's not made the focal point of this movie, but rightfully so, because I think if that's made the sort of focal point of the film, then again, I don't think it really works. But, you know, they're frightened, you know, and all these different range of emotions. And I don't think I've ever seen any performances that come near to this, to be honest with you. There's been amazing performances out there, but these are, for me, two of the best. Okay, right. Shall we start getting into some of the individual scenes in this movie? I'm just going to go in relatively chronological order, because this is one of the few films that starts off just depressing as fuck, and somehow, I think one of the things about this film is, like, you think, oh, this film can't get any more depressing, it doesn't even just get, like, a little bit more depressing, it gets, like, a lot more depressing. So we'll start off, we get this, like, opening scene, we see this little girl, which is obviously Lucy, sort of running for her life out of this, is it an abandoned hospital this is one of the things that sort of confused me, because she's, like, running out, it looks like this sort of abandoned warehouse, but that doesn't seem to be anything sort of connected to the house that we think she's been sort of kept in.
Well, I just assumed that they moved the operation to the house.
Made an upgrade, because there's a massive upgrade in terms of, like, security and, like, the way everything's set up.
Well, what was it? Is it, one of the characters called Mademoiselle, and I'm going to butcher that throughout the entirety of this episode. Doesn't she say that they were, like, a lot less organized back then at one point in the movie?
Yeah,
she does.
So anyway, so we see her sort of running out of this warehouse or whatever. She's absolutely covered head to toe in cuts and wounds and bruises and things like that. And then we get this sort of, like, news story about what happened to her. And we see her sort of befriending Anna as children. We also, you know, before we get the sort of title credit, the sort of title card, we see her sort of self-harming as a child as well. Now, obviously, there's something later in the film that will explain that, and we also see her being attacked by someone in the night. You know, there's I don't want to say creature because it looks a bit like a creature, but it's a young girl that's on her bed and it attacks her, and then we get the title sequence. So how do you guys feel about this sort of opening as for the first time watching it? What did this give you any sort of adequate warning to what was coming later in the film? Like, how did you feel about this opening?
I mean, I feel like it set up Lucina and his relationship really well, because you can see that she's like, obviously they bring her to an orphanage, she's not chilling with any of the other kids whatsoever, but for whatever reason her and Anna have this connection, and it definitely sets up this like Lucy and Anna against the world type thing. And you definitely kind of see those, because it's all like set to music, so you definitely kind of see those aspects of like her obviously being like a very traumatized kid as well, without them having to like shove it down your throat. It's just like, it's just very well done in subtle ways. So yeah, I quite liked it. But if it, you're asking me, oh, did you envision what happened at the end when you seen this? No, I didn't. Yeah, of course I fucking did that. That could have prepared me for that.
God forbid I ask a fucking question on this podcast. Jesus Christ. I don't know what you want from me, Lindsay, in this moment.
I don't know what you want from me right now in this moment either.
Sits and eats popcorn.
Oh dear.
It's great. I could just sit back and enjoy the drama.
Oh,
I love
dear.
It.
Lucy, what did you think of this opening?
Well, kind of like Lindsay said, so if you told me what the ending was, I'd be like, wait, what? Like, I would have just been completely confused. But it does set up the relationship with Lucy and Anna really well. That, like you said, they have this immediate connection, even though, like, we can see from the get-go, Lucy's been through something, unspeakable acts of torture and trauma. Anna is in an orphanage, so she's obviously gone through a lot as well. So I think it's an example there of trauma bonding as well, and, you know, finding somebody that's also been through things and you can connect with them on a deeper level. And even though, like, when you see that first scene of Lucy as well with the self-harm, at that point I'm thinking, how can this get any fucking worse? Because, like, in terms of darkness,
poor innocent Lucy.
I mean, like, when you see like acts of self-harm, especially in horror movies and things like that, it's teenagers, it's adults, it's never usually children. So it's just kind of showcasing that complete loss of innocence of Lucy. You know, she's completely broken down at this point, even at that age. And I think it just shows from the get-go like how transparent this movie is about the abuse that Lucy goes through, and it does not hold back. So I think it sets up well for what's to come.
Yeah, there's definitely no punches pulled in this movie. It's it fully sort of pulls back the curtain, I think, on you know what it wants to show. You know, and I think you're bringing up an interesting point there as well, is that Anna is also from I don't know if it's like a broken home or has suffered some sort of abuse as well, because like you say, she is in an orphanage, and at one point in the movie later on she does call her mother, which I think she says that they hadn't spoken in 2 years, I think. Yeah. They say, and then our mother total gaslights her on the phone and is like, do you think I'm happy with how you were treated in your childhood, or something to that effect. So we don't ever find out what the specifics are for Anna, but we know that she has gone through some kind of trauma as well. So we move on, and then after the title credit, we get to 15 years later. So, you know, these guys are now in their mid-20s sort of age, because they look like they're sort of what, like 8, 9, 10 years old maybe, during that opening scene. So early to mid-20s. But we get this scene where we've got like this normal family just having breakfast. And
when I seen that, I was like, what the fuck is it you guys watching? Because I was like, this is not the most fucked up thing I've ever seen in my life. And then she arrives and I was like, oh, okay, we're back now.
so many points of people's lives could just be defined by, she's arrived.
When that came up, like, see the way they shot that as well, even with the mum like washing her hands and everything in the sink, I was waiting for something to happen. I was like, oh fuck, what's gonna happen? did expect it to be that dark. Jesus
but it goes.
Christ.
But I don't. You find that this sort of like the happy moment just it lingers. It goes on and on and on a little bit, much longer than you would think it would. And then so when it does happen, obviously Lucy arrives at the house. She rings the doorbell as well, which I think is amazing. Like, that is definitely one of, you know how like the end, it's the same with like the end of Midsommar. It's definitely one of those you go girl moments. the door's opened and she just fucking blows this family away with a shotgun. First of all, she gets the parents and then she like, because you think for a moment that she's not going to kill the kids. Although the boy is 18, so he's an adult as well. I'm not sure how old the daughter was, but I think she looked a little bit younger. But she like questions the boy, and you know, asks how old he is and if he knew what his parents had been doing, and then she just blows him away anyway, and then doesn't hesitate to kill the daughter. So I just want to know, like, what do you think? What's going through your mind whilst this is going on, like? What does that hesitation sort of show you as well?
I think at that point she is questioning it, because like you say, there is that. I mean, at the start with the parents, there's no hesitation. It's just wabam, quite literally.
What was that sound effect?
Wabam. but with the son, she does question it. I think like after she pulls that trigger and does it, you can see that her eyes, like there's a shift in her mind, and then there is no hesitation for the daughter, because I think at that point she knows she's gone past a certain point and she's like, I've got to finish this now.
It's all or nothing, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's going through your mind, Lindsay?
Kind of something similar. Like, I think she sees the young boy, like, well, he's 18. And she's probably thinking, like, do I, don't I? Like, do I leave him? And he has to, she's probably thinking, do I leave him? And he has to live with the trauma of seeing his parents be shot. Or do I just do it because he's a part of them and he's just as bad as them? So I don't think there's a huge amount of, like, rational thought going on. And so I'm not, you know that way, like, I'm not judging.
One thing that I want to ask here at this point, do you think that the kids knew what was going on? Not, we don't have any reason to believe that they do or don't. Like, that's never sort of dealt with in this film. Just gut reaction. Do you think they know?
I mean, at this point in the film, I would say no. But with things that happen later on, when it seems like half of France descends on the house, I mean, how many times has this happened? They must think it's a bit odd if it's happened before, do you know what I mean? Like, so at this point in time, no, I don't think they did.
Okay, Lucy?
When watching it, no. My thoughts now, I don't think the daughter knew. I do think the son knew. I don't know, the like watching it for a second time today and seeing his face and the hesitation, and especially being 18 as well, and like,
yeah,
I do think the son knew, and I think Lucy clocked that as well, and that's why she shot him.
I'm in agreement with you, Lucy. I think he's turned 18. I don't think they'll have known growing up. I don't think the daughter knew, but he's turned 18. Is he going to be like taken into the family business sort of thing? So I think he knew as well, in agreement with you. But I just wanted to sort of get your thoughts on that. So, excuse me, Lucy calls on... Right. Before we get... How fucking long do these two lassies stay in this house where they've just committed mass murder? Like, I don't know about you, but I'd be getting the fuck out of there.
I know, but it's like I say, I don't think there's a huge amount of rational thought going on, like, because they have this like little tiff on the phone, and it's like, I told you just to see if they were there, and then we were going to, you know, decide what to do after that, but Lucy kind of took actions into her own hands.
Aye, but they have a sleepover and everything. Like, they might as well turn over their hot water bottles and their DVDs and make a fucking night of it. I was just like, how long are they staying in this blummin' house for?
I thought they would have had a bath or a shower to get rid of all the blood.
I know.
They're going to stay.
I know.
Well, their DNA is all over the place. They just needed to set it on fire.
But that's what I'm thinking. It's like, fair enough if it was a case of they were staying to clean up the house. And we do see Anna when she arrives, you know, trying to sort of hide the bodies. There's a big hole in the back garden that we see earlier on. And she's trying to, like, dump the bodies down there. But aside from that, there's no effort to sort of cover their tracks. So do you think there's also just an acceptance from both of these that there's no point in covering their tracks?
Well, that goes with, I guess, with this whole, like, nihilistic streak that runs through the film, that, yeah, maybe they did just think, oh, there's no point.
That's fair. Lucy?
I'm in agreement. I think, especially when Anna comes to the house and sees all the bodies lying across there, I think they both kind of accept at that point that if they're going to get caught, they're going to get caught. And I think, like, Anne also recognises how much Lucy has suffered, and I think Lucy's at the point as well that she feels like she needed that release, and, like, if that was it for her, she's kind of happy with that fate. You know, she's accepted that, and she's
gotten her revenge, hasn't she? She's dealt
the card that she's been handed with, and she's like, okay, right.
And she's avenged herself, really, as well, hasn't she? She's gotten, ultimately, what she wanted. You might argue that she's the only person in this movie that actually gets what they wanted, because no one fucking else does. So whilst all this is going on, we keep getting sort of... Lucy, sorry, she keeps getting attacked by this young girl that we saw in that opening scene that attacked her on the bed, and she gets, like, her back all slashed up, and, you know, her hand gets stabbed. I think she gets stabbed in the leg as well. And we also get, like, a number of flashback scenes. So one of the flashback scenes actually shows us how Lucy escapes. She took the opportunity of her guard. I'm assuming the guard was the mother. I don't think we actually see the face properly, so we can't really tell if it's the same person, but I'm just assuming that it's the mother that she's just killed. She sort of trips and falls, doesn't she? And I don't know if she breaks her ankle or just hurts herself, and Lucy uses that opportunity to escape. But she also sees that there's another girl who's being held captive, and she leaves her and runs. Now, I'm assuming at this point, once we've seen this, that that obviously the young girl is the girl that she left behind. And I don't know about you guys, but I think Lucy made the right choice in leaving her and running. Because if she hadn't and tried to help her escape, she would have just been caught again.
Yeah, like, I remember at this point in the film, like, gasping when I realised, like, oh, it's like it's a trauma hallucination. It's not like a supernatural element to the film, because, yeah, she absolutely did make the right decision, because I don't think she could have saved her and saved herself. But imagine walking around that guilt, and she was like a child. She looks like, I know we've kind of said, like, anything between like 8 and 12, but she's so young, and carrying all that guilt around with her, I just, felt her, sorry for her.
That for me was possibly one of the most shocking moments, when you find out that that's actually a hallucination in her head, and that girl doesn't actually exist. Like, that's, for me, one of the most shocking moments. Lucy, how did you feel about it?
That's when I cried. Oh. That was when I really cried, was when I found out that it was a trauma response. In terms of her escaping and leaving the girl, I was shouting at my TV, fucking run, like,
fucking like, savage, like, get in there, bitch.
Everyone for themselves. But no, like, realistically, come on, she's severely injured, she's severely malnourished, she's got this one chance to get out. You know, that other girl is locked down, she couldn't realistically get her out, so it was a case of take the one shot that you've got to get out of here. But living with that guilt, like, it would destroy you. And I think it's one of the most powerful messages out of this movie, is how trauma can really affect you and how trauma can manifest itself into physical ways. Because anybody that has dealt with severe trauma knows that, like, sometimes the most scary things in life are from our own mind, and they can manifest into what feels like really physical things. So I think that's incredibly important, and it's not touched on enough in cinema. I've not seen trauma really shown like this that often.
I don't think I've ever seen it shown like this, to be honest with you. Not to this sort of extreme as well. And obviously, you know, we were talking about how earlier and we see her sort of self-harming as a child. At no point, that's only to the outside world though. To her, she's not self-harming. She's, you know, ultimately she kills herself, but not to her. She doesn't kill herself. It's the girl that she left behind that kills her. You know, that, and can I just say, in terms of moments that make you sort of breathe in through your teeth, that scene where the girl is dragging that razor down the entire length of both of her arms,
yeah,
was made me like, ooh, that was a tough, that's a tough one to watch. Lindsay, have you got anything else to add?
No.
Okay. I know we're sort of like flying through certain aspects of this movie. We'll obviously talk about any sort of generalities at the end, but I just want to kind of get through some of the key aspects of this movie. We've jumped a little bit ahead there as well, because Lucy doesn't actually die until slightly later in the movie. In the meantime, we actually find out that Gabrielle, the mother, wasn't killed. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that scene where like Anna turns around and that woman just like wakens the fuck up, I was like, oh shit, like that freaked me the fuck out. Don't know how you guys felt about that.
Yeah, but then after the initial like she's alive, I was like, fuck off, like she's not alive. Like she's fucking dead. How could she be alive after all that time?
It did seem pretty bizarre, because she's shot with a shotgun at relatively close range,
and in the fucking stomach.
In the stomach, and then she's obviously been passed out. And whilst all this is going on, we don't really ever find out what the passage of time is like. And that's more important in the sort of final act of this movie than it is here. But we don't really know how long. We know that they've been to sleep since she's been shot as well, so we're assuming that it's a significant passage of time that's gone through here. How did you react, Lucy, when Gabrielle woke up?
This is one of the discrepancies I have about this movie. I just went, oh, get the fuck. Like, it's just like you said, the passage of time. Even if she wasn't killed on immediate impact, she would have bled out. It's a shotgun to your stomach, like that's a massive fuck off wound. But I get why they did it. I think it did give me a fright. It was the noises she was making as well, and the wheezing and everything. It was nae fun to watch.
No.
And then the hammer to the head, like, whoa.
She beats the shit out of her. Like, she caves that woman's face, head, just entire skull in. Like, and she's totally lost it here, isn't she? Because, I don't know, like, maybe she feels that her abuser is, you know, she can't get rid of her, you know, and she fucking loses it and, you know, makes sure. What did you think of this kill, Lindsay?
No, I thought it was like, I know what you mean. It's kind of, I was gonna say satisfying, but that's quite fucked up.
No, I don't think satisfying. I think it's a satisfying,
yeah,
one. I would go with that.
Yeah, because, and the whole scene is very, like, emotionally charged as well, because you can kind of see it from Anna's side. Like, I don't think Anna really wanted Lucy to murder them in the first place, and she's like, oh, maybe I can save this one. And then Lucy feels really betrayed, and there's all this, like, angst and stuff between them. So I think the whole scene's really well done.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, and this is we're awake, come on to talk about this. Obviously, do you get a sense, or there is a sense, that Anna doesn't believe everything that Lucy is saying? Because later on, when she discovers that there's someone else being kept captive in the house, she goes to Lucy's body and asks for forgiveness. Do you think that there was an element of her that either just didn't believe her or didn't believe the extent to what Lucy went through?
What I got from that was Anna was like really angry with Lucy for murdering them, and she was trying to keep this woman alive. And I think when she found the other woman that was captive, she realized the like full extent of what these people do to these women that they keep captive. So yeah, she almost had to apologize to Lucy for even thinking for one moment that these people were worth keeping alive.
Mm. Lucy, what do you think of it?
I'm in the same mindset. I think Anna was trying to do what she thought was the right thing. You know, I think going into the house, she didn't think that it would go down the way it did. And I think, like, unless you've been through something that horrendous yourself, it's really hard to put yourself in those shoes or imagine it. So it might not even be that. I mean, they obviously have a lot of love and care between each other, and Anna cares for Lucy very deeply. But I think she never fully understood the extent of it till the end, because she couldn't, you know, she couldn't put herself in the frame of mind that Lucy was in, because she hadn't experienced what these people had put her through. So I, you know, to see her asking for forgiveness as well, that was incredibly emotional as well. So I can see it from both sides, especially, you know, when we uncover like the real horror that these women went through. I completely understand Lucy's actions, but then I also understand where Anna's coming from, because she hadn't really realized until later on when she goes through it herself, like how awful it is.
I think as well, that's this, you know, we've talked about the performances of both of the actresses, but just the characters them as well, you know, the fact that we can empathize with both of them, or we can sort of understand both of them, you know, where we don't have a character in this movie that, you know, we get. How many times have you watched a horror film and there's a character that just makes a fucking stupid arse decision and you're like, what the fuck have you just went and done that for? Like, you idiot. And it takes you right out of it, doesn't it? And there's not that in here. And there's never a point where you are really sort of rooting for one over the other. You know, you're rooting for them as a pair. And I think that also works to this film's credit, because I think, you know, if one of them was just being irrational about something, I think that would have also detracted. I think this film really does tread a really fine line, because I think there's so much that could have gone wrong in terms of this overall movie, but they've just, in my opinion, and we'll obviously get to overall opinions later, but in my opinion, they've tread that line really, really well. But yeah, that's just my opinion. So we'll carry on. Anna then, she finds this sort of hidden lair in the basement, although the basement's got two floors. And she finds another girl who's been held captive. The girl, she's got it's like a metal blindfold on, and it's like, I say stapled to her skull, but it's like obviously like those heavy, heavy duty things. So it's like, it's well attached. Anna manages to, you know, get her back upstairs. She runs her a bath, and puts her in the bath and tries to, can I just say, with all those cuts and bruises on her body, I know what, you know what it feels like when you've just got like a wee cut on your hand or something and you wash your hands. Imagine getting in that water with all those wounds on her body. Like, that must have just been sheer agony. And then it's one of the more brutal scenes in the movie is when she is removing the face mask. How did you find this? Like, I don't know what to ask you here, because I just, it's so brutal. Like, what was just going through your head when you were watching this sort of all unfold?
So like, obviously I was like heavy wincing when they were pulling like the staples out, but it's when she finally gets it off and you see that like the mask is kind of fused to the skin on her scalp. And when it tears away, I'm just like, oh, like, it's clear that it's been there for a really, really long time. And I think that's, like, another good thing about this film is, like, little attentions to details like that to try and emphasise, like, this, she has been like this for a long-ass time. So, yeah, oh, yourself.
Lucy?
I had, like, I really tried not to do it at this point, but I was like covering myself with my hoodie and had my eyes like this, like, and it's when you actually look at it as a scene, it is brutal, but it's not, it is gory, but we have seen other things that are more gorier. I think it's the way it's shot, and it's done really slow as well. It's like pin by pin that comes out. And like you say, Lindsay, it's the attention to detail. It's been stuck on there for a hell of a long time. There's so many cuts that have scars over them, and she's clearly emaciated. She's severely malnourished as well. This poor girl has been tortured for a long time. And I think there needs to be credit given for this actress as well, because even in the scene beforehand where Anna finds her, and you know, she's like cowering and hugging her legs as well, because it's finally somebody who isn't there to hurt her. And it just, it felt so authentic. That's the one thing I can say, it just felt so authentic. And it was, I just think this film does these kind of scenes really well, in the sense that it's so brutal, but when you actually look at it at a second watch, it's not the gore that's always the brutal thing, it's humanity. And it's the way that people have treated other people. And
it's like, yeah, that it's the dichotomy as well of like seeing how badly so like people have treated this woman. And then I think this is a really good scene as well to show like how much of a good person Anna is. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like some other people might have just run away. Do you know what I mean? But she does it. She's like, I'm going to take her upstairs, I'm going to bathe her, I'm going to take this thing off her head, and I'm going to get, like, well, I assume she's going to get her out of there. And I don't think a lot of people would have done that.
Yeah.
Because it'd be pretty terrifying to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think a lot of good people as well wouldn't have done that just out of fear, you know. That, I don't think not someone who did would maybe have ran, and you know, it's fight or flight, right? It's that whole thing, isn't it? So I completely agree with you there. I'd just like to point out, by this point, we're probably about, what, two-thirds of the way through the movie, and nothing has prepared us for what is about to happen in this film. Because up until now, like, we know that Lucy was heavily abused by these people. We obviously find this girl. We see what the aftermath of that is. Did any of you, it goes back to that sort of question, did any of you kind of expect that we would actually get to see just how they abuse people? Like, did you know that was coming? Because obviously, first time watching it, like, did you know that that was going to happen?
No, like, I feel like this film takes so many twists and turns. Like, you say, like, Lucy dies, what, halfway through the film? And you're like, oh, the main character's dead. And then, like, we get this scene with the woman in the metal face mask, and then all of a sudden she's shot, and it's like, you know, this official body comes in, and it's like, oh, by the way, we're going to drag you down here. And, you know, we move on to the next part of the film. So it just kind of goes west. Like, after Lucy dies and, like, after we find this woman, I don't think you could have prepared me for what was going to happen. Not in a kind of, like, oh, it's so terrible. It's just, like, if you told me, I would have been like, what kind of fucking bullshit movie is this? But it's actually not. They pull it together really well.
I do like as well, I think the fact that we don't really linger on this woman dying, but she gets completely shot in the forehead. And I think that's quite a good metaphor for how little she actually means to this group, is that we just do not linger on her death at all. She's shot, and then that's it. She's just forgotten about entirely. We never even find out her name, I don't think, in this movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously it sucks for her, but I like that aspect about the movie as well. Lucy, did you have any idea what was about to come?
No, and at this point I actually paused it, because I was like, wait, how much is left of this movie? Because I was the same as you, Lindsay. I was thinking, okay, one of the main protagonists has died, all the family has died, and, you know, we had the twist with Lucy and the with the trauma response. I thought that was going to be the really big reveal. And I was like, what are you going to do in the next 40 minutes? But then it takes it on a whole other level. But I do really enjoy the ending of this and the context it gives to the reasoning behind why these things happen. I didn't know it was going to go on such a deep level, but it almost, like, watching this a second time or a third time, I feel like it's one of these movies that you should watch again. It's a lot to put yourself through, but I think it's one of those movies you should watch again at least once after, just to kind of see that beginning full context with everything considered, the reasoning behind it and the people behind it. But no, I did not expect at all what the sending would be. But they like you said, Lindsay, they pull it together really well in those last 40 minutes. And the pacing of this is really good as well. Even though this movie is dire after dire, everything has a reason. And yeah, I just feel like they didn't go over anything too long. Nothing was too short. I'm rambling now.
It's okay. So obviously Anna, like we say, gets captured. She gets taken into this sort of basement and she's confronted by Mademoiselle. Saying that in my best French accent here, could you tell? And she starts talking to her about creating a martyr. And up until this point, like we've not really heard anything about this whole side of the family that they've killed or the abuse. Like we don't really know what the fuck's going on. And she talks about people who go through such abuse, they abuse people in really cold, systematic ways over like really extended periods of time. And basically they break them, don't they? They break their spirit, they break their soul. And they are of the belief that people who reach this sort of they transcend into this sort of like higher plane of consciousness and they see things that your normal person, your average person on the street would not be able to see. And so the whole idea of it is that this person can see, you know, what comes after you die. And that's the ultimate goal that this sort of, I don't know what you want to call them, if it's a cult or this organization, that's their ultimate goal. Or do you think they've got any sort of other goal? Like, is it just a case of they're trying to find out what happens after you die?
I mean, I think, it's going to be obviously a bit trying to find out what happens after you die. But I think as well, just probably seeing how far they can push the limits of people as well. When I say people, it's mostly women, which I thought was like quite symbolic that they chose women. And they were talking about how women seem to respond better to it, whatever, because of course, like, women are generally like second-class citizens compared to men. I know obviously as a white woman I've got a lot better than a lot of women in the world, but it's still not great. And the way like women endure pain relentlessly, like through their life and stuff as well, like childbirth and things like that, I thought it was interesting that the writer decided to go down this route and choose women to be the ones who are like systematically abused to the point they achieve martyrdom, whatever that means.
So I think most people would think in terms of the definition, martyr is not what the definition they're using in this movie. In this movie, they're using it as witness. A martyr is a witness, and that makes sense because, you know, the people they're trying to martyr, the people they're trying to witness, you know, what the average person cannot see, which I don't think that's quite its meaning in 21st century world. I think it means something slightly different. Lucy, what do you think about the sort of the goals of this organization, this confrontation with Mademoiselle, the fact that it's, she says, you know, it's majority young women that are chosen to be martyred?
I picked up on that as well as Lindsay did, about women, and I can also say as well, you know, I definitely have privilege as a white woman, and you know, I have shelter and I have a great support system, but every single woman in this world has dealt with pain and suffering because of being a woman. And I think that speaks volumes. And again, it was just another kind of kick to the heart that this movie gave me and really made me kind of feel so attached to Anna and to Lucy and to the suffering that they went through. And I like the juxtaposition here between religion and science as well, because when I first got to this bit, when they're talking about martyrs and this higher being and getting to this greater self and the line between life and death, I thought it was going to be like a purely kind of religious context and they were wanting to go to this afterlife. But really, you know, kind of like we're saying before, like mortality is one of humanity's biggest fears. And whether you're religious or not, nobody knows what happens in the afterlife. It's one of the world's greatest mysteries. So I think that they have that kind of juxtaposition. And then there's the kind of psychological aspect of it as well. How can you break down a person to that point where they're just, they're a shell of a human being? The lights are on, but nobody's there. So I like that juxtaposition because, yeah, like ultimately, no matter what side you're on, nobody knows the answer. And it's humanity's greatest curiosity. Humans are curious, you know, and these people will do anything to get what they think is the answer.
Okay. Very interesting from perspectives from both of you there. But that's before we get on to this big finale, the big finale, basically how this movie ends. Let's talk a little bit about the suffering and the torture that Anna has to go through, because I think this is kind of the crux of, you know, the movie is all predicated around how these people abuse these young girls. And up until this point, we've never actually really seen it other than, you know, a few slaps here or there. And that's not to detract from how much of an abuse a big slap across the face is, because that's just as bit much abuse. But this is just unbelievable, the kind of torture that Anna has to go through. First of all, it's the physical beatings she gets from a pretty hefty looking chap as well. I'd be tapping out there and then. I'd be like, right, that's me. I'm done. Like, I'm no putting. But, you know, she's sort of force-fed this. I'm assuming it's some sort of, like, nutrient paste. Like, it's got all of the nutrients that she needs just to live. But she's also, you know, she has to sort of go to the toilet where she sits. Like you say, she's beaten relentlessly. She gets her hair shaved, and then as the time progresses, and this is where the sort of progression of time becomes a bit more important, because we don't actually know how long has passed, but I'm going to assume that it's quite a significant period of time, because we see, you know, things like we see her hair in various different states, you know, it gets cut quite short, but then later on, you know, she's got a buzz cut as well. So I'm going to assume that this happens over quite a lengthy period of time, you know, a number of weeks or a couple of, you know, months or whatever. But we also see that, you know, she's got various bruises and cuts and things on her body as well. What was you thinking when we were seeing this? And this is before we get to the sort of final piece of abuse that she has to suffer, because obviously that goes beyond anything we could have possibly imagined we were going to go see. But in this point, where it's the beatings, it's the slaps, it's the, you know, things like that, how was you feeling?
I don't know why, but the first, like, force feeding that she goes through, like, really got me. Like, I was dry broken. I felt like it was happening to me, because it was just, the way she was just like shoving it in her mouth, and the food looked so disgusting. And then it wasn't until a second watch, because on the first watch I just felt like she was force fed, and then she got the fucking ever loving shit beat out of her immediately afterwards, but there is a bit of time in between, and it's just fucking relentless. And there's parts in this where I'm like, I feel like I love her so much, because she fights for a really long time. Like, there's one point where she's so emaciated, and you can see that she's like covered in bruises, and she's got a shaved head. And when he turns around, she just pushes him. And you kind of know as a viewer, like, you're not going to do anything, a wee lassie, but she's just like wanting him to know, like, no, like, I'm not fucking happy about this. And yeah, I couldn't help but just think, oh, I love you, like, when she done that, because I don't think a lot of people could have done that for that long.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Lucy, what do you think? What was going through your head?
I'm in agreement. I kind of got a bit at the force feeding, and it's even like, I think something we haven't touched on, the score in this is really good, but also the lack of score in certain scenes like this one with the force feeding. Like, you can hear the clinking of like the spoon or the fork in her mouth, and it's like little details like that that just heighten, you know, the awfulness of the situation. And yeah, right up until the end, Anna is a fighter till the end, and you really, really feel for her, you know, everything that she goes through. and the beatings are so relentless. Something that I've seen people note about as well, and I don't know, I was maybe expecting it, and I'm so glad it didn't happen. You almost feel, at least at the start of the movie, that there might be some sexual abuse in this, yeah. And there isn't. And I think that's important for us to note as well, is there isn't any sexual connotation in this. It's just pure torture, just breaking a human spirit down.
Yeah, I think that is a very important sort of distinction to make as well, because I'm like, yeah, I was the same as you when especially the first time you're watching it, you kind of expect it to go that way, don't you? Especially in this sort of part of the movie where she's being assaulted, she's being beaten up by a man, you know, you're waiting for it to happen, and of course it never does happen. There is absolutely nothing sexualized about this film, and I think that's really important that they didn't do that. I think, again, had they done that, that would have been something that ultimately would have detracted from this movie, because that's not what this film is about. One thing that I like as well is, it would have been really easy for them to just show relentless beatings and beatings and beatings and beatings. But they're clever about it as well. They also show them playing with her mind. You know, at one point he releases her and sort of stands aside and lets her try to escape, and then beats her up for trying to escape. You know, and I like the fact that they showed that, because it showed they weren't just, you know, mindlessly beating her. There was a reason to what they were doing, or at least gave some sort of rationale, or if nothing else, showed a level of smarts on the behalf of the antagonists. I don't know, what did you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I guess it, like when you put it like that, it goes to that whole like breaking them down a bit. If you give them that little sliver of hope and then take it away from them, like that's going to further break their spirit. So yeah, it was like clever to write that in.
Yeah. Okay, right, here it is. Right, we're going to talk about this final piece of abuse that Anna has to go through. So she's basically put in this contraption that turned out to just be, you know, like a surgery, like a gurney, and she has all of her skin removed apart from the skin on her face. What did you
I
think?
I paused the film and I was like, Anna, where's your skin? I was just not expecting it at all.
What?
Just like, sitting in my bed like, where's your skin?
Where's your skin, hen?
Where's your skin? I just wasn't expecting it at all. And then on a second watch, I was like, fucking hell, they even took in your snip. That's sacred.
Jesus Christ. Okay. So aside from where's your skin?
No, but honestly, like, she gets taken away, put on the weird gurney thing, and then you can see she's in pain, and then she comes back and she's got no skin. Like, in any thought process that you've had before that, was no skin going to be one of them?
No.
Like, it was,
I thought it was
going to
be brain surgery or something.
I thought they were going to cripple her, or like you say, like ECT or like something. Something along those lines. I don't think if anyone says, oh yeah, I knew they were going to take her skin, they're fucking lying.
They're lying.
They're absolutely full of shit. Lucy, what's going through your head here?
I was not expecting that. Like I say, when I saw that scene, I thought it might have been like a brain surgery or, you know, something kind of, I don't know, they've tortured her for so long, they're maybe looking in her brain and the neural pathways and things like that. Can I just say though, there's a museum called Body Worlds. It's based in Amsterdam, and it's real life bodies. It's real specimens. It's people that have donated their bodies to science. I've been a couple times, and you can see it's full slices of people that you can see. You can see everything from head to toe. And even seeing that, but seeing this, I wasn't prepared for it. And I don't know, it creeped me out. It's actually very, from what I remember, it's pretty anatomically correct from what I saw in Body Worlds, and it freaked me out.
It was powerful
though.
Oh, absolutely. But holy shit, like that's the point, isn't it, in this movie, where you're like, right, that's, you cannot push this any further now. Like, you, this is, and obviously this does, this is where the movie peaks in terms of the level of abuse that, that she has to go through. And they tell her as well, like, this is the final stage, like, there's nothing else after this. Once this is done, that's you. But we don't really know what that means as well, like, as...
I think I still had a sliver of hope that maybe she would get out somehow. And then once you see this, you're just like... No. But, she gonna die there.
Well, this is the thing as well. Let's talk about this ending. So she supposedly reaches this stage or this state of martyrdom, and you know, she's supposedly crossed over and seen what's on the other side, let's just call it, for lack of a better term. And we sort of get a glimpse of that, like, you know, we see like the bright light and things like that. But and we find out that she whispers to Mademoiselle, we can only assume, which we obviously, the viewer, don't get to see or listen to what she says, but we assume that she's told her what she saw. Whether she's told the truth or not is a different story, but I'm going to go with it. She probably has, because I don't think she's in any fit state to be thinking about constructing lies. But... So they have this big gathering of people at the house, obviously other members of the organization, other people involved in this, and Mademoiselle is to present the findings of what Anna has told her. But before she can be before she gets up there, we get this scene where, you know, she's taking off her makeup, she's, you know, she takes off her what's the name for the thing that she's got over her hair?
A turban.
A turban. Toupee?
Oh no, I thought it was a wig thing that she had on. Not like a hairpiece.
No.
She has a hairpiece and a turban.
Well, yeah. Oh, okay. No, I meant the thing that was covering the rest. So we see her taking that off, and this guy obviously asks her if she's like ready to present, and she says something, do you ever wonder what happens after you die, or something like that, and then he's like, yes, of course, and she's like, well, keep wondering. He's like, keep wondering, bitch, and then shoots herself in the fucking mouth, and that's the end of the fucking movie. Well, it's not the end. We also see another shot of Anna, don't we, in her state, and then the movie ends. How did you feel about the fact that we never get to find out, number one, what Anna saw or what she told Mademoiselle, and secondly, the fact that this movie's ended, these people ultimately, aside from Mademoiselle, but it doesn't matter because she shot herself, ultimately do not achieve their goal. They don't get to find out because Mademoiselle kills herself. How do you feel about the fact that all of this really is for nothing, as we've been talking about throughout this movie? And then finally, what do you think that she told Mademoiselle?
Well, what we saw was Windows Media Player visualizations, like back in the day. So if I'd found out that I'd been systematically torturing people for decades to find out what happened in the afterlife, and you told me Ken Windows Media Player, I'd probably have killed myself or not, because... Do you know what I mean? Like, but as well, see, I kind of love Mademoiselle's death scene as well, because the way she's like, oh, keep wondering. Like, see, if she wasn't like a sociopath that tortured people for decades, I'd be like, what a queen. But
it's a line and a half, isn't it? It's a good fucking line.
It is.
I love it, but it's that way. It's just like, so we're just going to torture more people to find out what happens. Not that, like, I doubt Anna would have been the end of it anyway. They probably would have done it again and again and again. But it's just like, you got what you wanted and it still wasn't good enough.
Well, the guy also says previously, like, oh, they've been doing this for X amount of years, however many years, and only 4 women have reached the stage of martyrdom. And Anna was the first that was able to sort of communicate after that. So how many
makes you think as well, maybe it's all shit, maybe maybe it's all bullshit, and maybe you should stop torturing people. How about that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, what I was, the point I was making is, like, how many people have come before Anna over the course of all those years? You know, that's what that sort of really meant in terms of Lucy, how, in terms of the fact that this has all been for fuck all, how did you feel about this ending?
I love this ending. I think this is the perfect ending for this movie, because it really does highlight it has been for sweet fuck all, but at the end of the day, they can't prove what happens after life if you're just dead, or if there's something else. And that's like I was saying before, it's like humanity's greatest question. That's what people have been obsessed with since the dawn of time. That's what kind of, obviously I'm only speaking my own facts, that's what spawned religion as well. What happens after life? What is there after life? So I think that ending really speaks volumes. And in terms of what Anna says to Mademoiselle, I like to think personally that she tells her to fuck off and there's nothing. And then she's too much of a spiteful bitch to say that. So she's like, oh, I'm going to act as if like I know this great secret when there isn't really anything. And she, you know, she can't admit that. And out of sheer pride, she kills herself.
See,
because that's the thing as well. Like, Mademoiselle could just go down there and say literally whatever she wants, because it's not like anybody's going to go and like fact check with Anna. Like,
yeah.
Can I just double check this, please? I know you've got no skin and you're lying in the bath, but just for the records, thanks.
I think she's either told her that there's nothing, or that whatever it is she's seen was so horrendously terrible that she's decided to kill herself. I would err on the side that she's probably told her that there's nothing, and that's just been too much for Mademoiselle to take. It's been too much, and that's too much for her to reveal to all these people who are obviously so invested in what's going on, that it's all for nothing. We live for nothing. And, you know, that brings in even bigger, even more philosophical questions in terms of the meaning of life and all sorts of other things that we just don't have the time to get into. One of the things that I've kind of been avoiding talking about, but I don't really think I can avoid it for the entire episode, is the theme of religion that's sort of in this movie. What comments do you think this movie makes of just not any specific religion, because we're not shown any specific religion in this movie. It's sort of just generic religious beliefs, isn't it? But what comments do you think this movie makes on religion?
I don't think it makes any comments that haven't been made in throughout history. You know, like throughout... That's what I like about this as well. It doesn't specify it as any one religion. I'm not religious at all. But I think it really kind of highlights... what like I was saying earlier, what kind of humans have done throughout history. I think people are so terrified of mortality and what happens after life that these people will go to any lengths to find out what happens. And these matriarchs, we've had these kind of pillars in religion from Christianity to everything, you know, the suffering and crucifixions and all these kinds of things. So I think it speaks volumes, but it's something that people don't tend to really talk about. It's something that people are uncomfortable with speaking about, but it's a question that never goes away, you know?
Lindsay?
Yeah, it's kind of this side of religion that I don't particularly like, just because I feel like it tries to like dictate how people live their lives, and it's like folk who are religious who are absolutely obsessed with what's going to happen in afterlife, like, oh, I need to do this at the next thing so I get to heaven and I avoid hell and stuff. And it's just like, you spend all your time, and this is like what these people have done, they spend all their time worrying about what's going to happen on the other side, that you forget to live your life in the here and now. And you know, that's what we think anyway, why Mademoiselle ultimately takes her life. So yeah, like, I do kind of like that side of it, asking those questions about the afterlife. And I do like as well that they keep it, as much as it's like got a religious overtone, they kind of almost keep it secular at the same time, but they don't really point out one religion in particular.
Yeah, it's very unambiguous, isn't it, throughout the movie. I think it's a really interesting comment. I'm with you, Lindsay. Like, I really don't like... It's no secret. I don't like religion. Pretty much full stop. I'm not religious in the slightest. I don't like the fact that, you know, it dictates to people how to live their lives, like you're saying, you know, in order to reach this afterlife that we do or don't know exists. But we don't know exists. No one knows if it exists. But may or may not exist. And that ultimately is so damaging to so many, you know, already marginalized groups in society, whether that's gay people or, you know, other religions or black people or, you know, any of these sorts of things. So I'm really, really anti-religion. So I was quite happy here to see religion get a one big fuck you at the end of this movie. But I am happy. I don't know if happy is the word, but I'm glad that they didn't sort of single out Christianity or Judaism or anything like that. You know, to keep it quite unambiguous, I think was a smart move. So that's it. That's the movie. this is a question that I want to ask, and it's going to seem like a bit of an odd question, but it's one that I struggle to answer. Did you enjoy this film?
I remember us having the same conversation after Midsommar, and us both kind of struggling to answer it. But I think, I don't know. Like, there's many aspects of this film that I really, really, really like. There's so many things that are like really well done. But I kind of feel like it's the best film I'm never going to watch again, you know, that way.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand. Lucy, did you enjoy this?
I did.
Oh, okay.
No, I actually did. Like, kind of like I said, like, it was the same kind of feeling as Midsommar, like you said. This made me cry twice. It felt like a very cathartic release. I think you have to be emotionally prepared to go into this movie. If you're in the wrong headspace or you're not ready to deal with triggering subject matters, don't watch this. But I think I'm only speaking about it from my perspective, but it felt very cathartic. I don't know, it made me look at myself and my own trauma and how I view things, and I think it asks those big questions, and it's an emotional experience. It's not a movie that I would be like, oh, it's Friday night, what am I going to watch? Let's put our martyrs. But I think I don't regret watching it.
Okay.
You know, I'm glad I did.
Okay, cool. I love this movie, but I do not like this film. Like that, then I know that doesn't really make sense, but it makes sense to me that I think this film is absolutely amazing, but I do not want to watch this movie again. Like, I probably will. I'm weird like that. And, you know, in a year's time, I'll probably get the itch to chuck it back on. But I don't want to watch this film again. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to sort of define that as into terms of whether we enjoy it or not. Okay, so we've gone through everything on my list in terms of my subject matters. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we move on?
I just kind of wanted to touch on like the special effects and the makeup. Like, I know we kind of spoke about it in terms of the metal mask scene, but I think at like every single point in this film, like all of the cuts and scars are believable. Like, even in that, what we kind of said about like the skin after it's been removed, like it looks really realistic. Even when she's in that gurney and you see like her mouth and stuff is all dry, it's just, like everything is hyper realistic. So I definitely wanted to give a shout out to the special effects and makeup team.
I think it's really important as well, because I think if that's something they hadn't got quite right, even just once or twice in this film, that again, that's something that could have taken you right out of the 100%. Entire film. I think because of the subject matter of this film, you have to be 100% invested in this movie at all times. I think if there's any stage of this film that you drop out because something's not believable or something's not worked, it ruins the entire thing.
Definitely, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would give props to that. Lucy, what do you think of that?
I thought the special effects were really great in this movie, and especially the passage of time as well, because I don't know if we touched on that. I think Anna is kept for like 17 years. I think they say that at the end. It's like a really long time that she's...
No, the whole... Since they started to now is 17 years. Okay. They haven't kept Anna for 17.
Dingus. I was like, fucking hell.
They've kept her for a length of time because, well, we're led to believe... I think she's been kept for a number of months. That's how long I think, but that's open to interpretation.
Yeah, sorry, I was just being an idiot. Fuck my drag. But no, I do think that the special effects are really good in this. And you, like you said, this is such an emotional film. It's such a raw film. It's so, the emotions are really raw. Everything's heightened, and to really be invested in it, you have to believe in every aspect of this. And I think the special effects are really add to that. And like say, the passage of time, and even just like seeing how malnourished these women are, that really shocked me as well. Not even just the gore, it's just the sheer, like, how they're just wasted. Like, you know, they're just, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just pure torture.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. Anything else you want to add about this film, Lucy?
Not that I can think of. I really want to highlight just that the way that they dealt with trauma and the experiences of Lucy in a very authentic way. I thought that was done really well. Yeah,
it's funny because, you know, normally when we do a review, we talk about things like the makeup and the score and you know, all these other things, and we haven't really sort of touched in on that. We've briefly sort of talked about it. We've talked pretty much exclusively about the themes of this movie, but I think that's just because the themes that this movie deal with and the questions it asks and it poses are so huge in terms of life and afterlife and things like that, that I think that really has to dominate the conversation. But I just find that quite interesting. But if there's nothing else that you guys want to talk about just now, obviously we'll let you everyone sum things up in a little bit, but we will get into some trivia. So, we'll start off with the finances of this movie. It had a budget of 3.3 million euros. At the box office, though, only made 1.1 million. So, box office flop, only made a third of its budget back. I think movies like this, it's always tough to market movies like this. You know, we were... I was doing the Wrong Turn episode with Candy and Sean, we had talked about how they had really struggled to get a trailer that was going to be used for general audiences. The American sort of ratings association would just not give a rating for a trailer to be used. They had to cut down. I can't imagine that there was much in this film that was going to be able to use and make an appropriate trailer to make people want to come and watch this movie.
It's not a movie you'd really want to go to the cinema to see either, is it? Like,
it's not a date movie, is it? You don't want to go you don't want to go date night to Cineworld, get your hot dog and your popcorn and things, and sit down and watch this, you know.
Yeah, I was quite glad I had, like, all my home comforts around me.
Definitely. And so speaking of that, and I know we hear about these sorts of things quite often. I think we heard them a lot about when things like Paranormal Activity was coming out and things. But there are several accounts of audience members during its premiere. I can't remember which film festival this movie premiered at, sorry. But there is some accounts of audience members walking out, some of them fainting, some of them vomiting, and some just bursting into tears. And it's one of the few times that I actually believe those statements.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those ones, like, I hear about people walking out of other ones, so I'm like, oh, shut up. But for this one, I'm like,
so much
I think
sympathy.
As well, I know. But the whole make out is like, oh, it's so scary, I had to walk out, behave yourself. But for this one, it's like, I could believe it because of the themes and stuff in it. It's like, more protects, like, your brain. It's like, actually, like, this is too much for me, I need to leave. And I could totally believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was talking about how this film kind of caught me. I'd seen this film multiple times before. And it still caught me at the end with an emotional sort of cry. And I didn't even expect it. It just came on me at the end. And I don't even know what did it. I don't even know what, because it was right at the very end. So yeah, like I can definitely envision people being quite emotional watching this movie for the very first time. This movie received 58 cuts to it just to get an R rating in America. And they had to make 58 That's different cuts to this movie, and they ended up cutting, I think it was about 6 minutes worth of footage, which I've not seen. I've not seen the unrated version. I'm not sure I want to be honest. Like, what the fuck are they having to cut out?
I know, it's making you think, how could it get worse? So that's what we asked ourselves throughout this movie. How can it get worse? And it gets worse.
Apparently so. Apparently there's 6 minutes of worse. Moriana Alui, who obviously plays Anna, she broke 3 bones during the filming of this movie, and she had to spend 6 weeks recuperating in bed before being allowed to return to filming. So yeah, like that we were talking about how, you know, really great performances for the actresses. They were really putting their bodies on the line in this movie, you know. And both her and Mylene Yampinoy have both stated, although I couldn't really find any sort of stories as to why, but they've both stated that they would never, ever, ever work with Pascal Laugier again, who's obviously the writer and director. Because I couldn't find any stories of, you know, him being a particular shitty human being, I'm potentially going to go with just that this was maybe a really traumatizing experience for them and really mentally exhausting.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, having to get into that mindset every single day for filming. Like, yeah, I can imagine that's a lot for an actor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there might be some other reason, but I couldn't find it. I did try and look for it. Laugier has stated that he wrote the script, because he's obviously the writer as well, he wrote the script for this movie whilst in a state of clinical depression and was heavily suicidal at the time. And I think that very much comes across in this movie.
I definitely feel that.
And finally, he's also said that he was inspired by Eli Roth's Hostel, but where he felt that... Hostel was a movie about pain. He wanted to make a movie. Hostel was a movie about suffering. He wanted to make a movie about pain, and I just find it very bizarre that he makes a distinction between pain and suffering. Like they're emotions that do not go hand in hand. So I just find that a bit odd.
I'm not a big fan of Hostel.
It's Eli Roth. Like, I'm not a big fan of Eli Roth, to be honest with you. Not because of the gore factor. Eli Roth's just allegedly not a very nice person. So
I've heard that. I don't know the ins and outs myself, but yeah, I feel like Hostel's very like surface level. Like, I didn't find it very entertaining.
But that's very Eli Roth as well. Like, if you even think about movies like Cabin Fever and that as well, they're all very surface level, you know. Mm. They're not bad movies, I think, objectively. But, you know, we're never ever going to be putting them up there with the best movies in the world.
This is not a philosophical question after. Much better than Hostel.
This is much, much better than anything Eli Roth has done in his career. I hope he's listening. and that's it. That's all I've got for trivia. A few good bits of trivia there. Anything? I know sometimes you guys like to do your own when you're not hosting. Any other pieces that you found out?
No, I'd heard that thing about the actresses not wanting to work with him either. So I spent one evening this week like furiously googling to try and find out why, but I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything either. I really wanted to know why as well. I think if it had been something that was more sinister, we possibly would have been able to find something, some sort of account. But yeah. Lucy, have you got anything?
No, not for me. Sorry, I've got a cat that's whining that wants a cuddle.
That's all right. Mine's is currently headbutting the door because, you know, she's like that. Right, let us move on and we'll get into the ratings and our final thoughts. So as always, we will start off with the critics' score. IMDb have rated this movie 7.1 out of 10. There is no Metacritic score. Could not find one. Tried to. Could not find one. Time to play our favourite game, our Rotten Tomatoes guessing game. It feels good not having to wrap my brain, because I wouldn't have a clue. We're going to find this out when we get to my ratings. But we'll start with the critics, and we'll let Lucy go first this time. So Lucy, what do you think the Rotten Tomatoes critics scored Martyrs? I almost said Hostel there. Martyrs.
I've no fucking clue. So I'm going to go right in the middle and go 50.
50%. Interesting. Lindsay?
I'm going to go 60.
Oh, close. Lindsay, you're going to take it. They rated this movie 64%.
Ooh.
So you're very close. Critics' consensus, a real polarizing movie. That's an understatement of the fucking century. This Gaelic torture porn is graphic, brutal, nasty, and gruesome, and not to everyone's taste. Fair enough. But you won that one, so you can go first for the second one. What do you think the Rotten Tomatoes audience scored this?
I'm going to guess 40 for the audience.
Interesting. Okay. Lucy?
I'm going to go 55.
You know what? This is one of the times that I'm raging, because if I was there and I didn't know, I would have gone for classic comedy 69, and the audience scored this 69%. So Lucy, you're going to take the audience score.
I was actually going to say 69. I was like, should I say that for this movie? Is it appropriate?
So they're very close scores between
the
critics and the audience, which I found quite interesting, because the critics, I don't like the fact that they call it torture porn, because I think this is more than torture porn, but I think they actually hit the nail pretty on the head. This isn't a movie that's going to be for everyone, so I'm surprised that those scores were so evenly matched. But we'll go to our scores now. So since you won that last one there, Lucy, you can go first. What are you going to rate Martyrs out of 10?
This was a really difficult one for me. I think this is one of the most difficult ones I've had to rate, because...
We say that every week.
I'll get the fuck.
I said we!
Okay.
Get in the mood.
I really liked this movie. I expected to hate this. I know you hyped it up a lot, Ian, and the hype was suffice, but would I watch it again? Not for a while.
Well, we're so covering it again next week. No, I'm joking.
But I'm still gonna give it an 8.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
An 8, yeah.
Lindsay.
as much as this film is obviously like really hard to watch, they're in every aspect of like filmmaking, I think this is like really hard to beat. Really good acting, amazing makeup, a really put together plot. It's really well paced as well. For such a short movie, they pack a lot in. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Interesting. You know, it's funny you said like it's got an amazing plot. I'm pretty sure one of the listeners said it's got a really flimsy plot. When I put out. But anyways,
different strokes for different folks.
Indeed, absolutely. Like I said, I love this movie. I do not like this film. Like, this is such a difficult film to watch. It's so it does drain you emotionally. I watched it around lunchtime today, and I was actually tired after watching this. You know, I felt like I needed a nap, because this is such a draining movie to watch. This does actually take some sort of physical effort. Lindsay's absolutely right, though. And I said it earlier as well. Like, I think this is two of the finest acting performances that we may ever talk about in a horror movie, with the two main characters. And in every other, there is no aspect of this film that you think, that was shit. There's nothing that you think takes this, like, takes you out of the movie particularly. I think the only thing that might detract, well, will detract for a lot of people, is the themes that this movie deals with, and you know, the fact that it pushes the line, it pushes the envelope so far. But I absolutely love this film, so for that reason, I'm also going to give it 9 out of 10. which means Lucy's the bitch this week.
I feel well, but I actually thought, is 8 too high? The only reason I don't give it a 10 is just because I don't know if I can put myself through that again, at least for another 5 years.
I can't give this a 10 because I think, you know, there's so many people out there, I think, as well, who will dislike this movie for very legitimate reasons. You know, usually when we're rating things, like, you know, like, we all have movies, like, we irrationally dislike. Like, we dislike for no other reason, otherwise it just doesn't hit for us. Where there's nothing potentially objectively wrong with this. I don't think there's anything objectively wrong with this movie. However, it's completely understandable if someone does not like this film. So,
oh, yeah.
I think that's pretty fair. But with all of our scores and the critics' scores combined, gives Martyrs an average rating of 7.3 out of 10. It puts it in 37th place of the now many movies because I've messed
too many now.
I've messed my. I think it's like 95 movies now that we've covered on the show. It gives it, and it's actually quite interesting because we mentioned it. Gives it the exact same score as Midsommar.
We've
had a few sort of weird quirks like that lately, haven't we? You know, about certain movies getting the same rating as other things as well. In terms of the movies around it, it's one place above Gerald's Game, one place below Descent.
I love Midsommar. I like Gerald's Game. I haven't seen The Descent, but it seems to be very popular online. Like, I think a little spot for it.
Yeah, we covered that a while ago, Lucy. We loved it, didn't we?
It was good.
We really liked it.
Everybody online loves The Descent, and it's not on streaming, so I haven't seen it, but as soon as it is, I'm going to watch
it. It pops up on streaming every now and again, though, so keep an eye out for it. It'll definitely go back on, I think, at some point.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah, I think you would as well. That's it. We are done. So, oh no, we're not. We've got the listeners. Sorry.
Poor listeners, you're just like,
it's now time to get into what the listeners thought of this movie. As always, in the run-up to these main episodes, we throw out across our social media asking for you, the listeners, opinions on what you think, and we pick sort of 4 or 5 of our favourites to read out. So this week, Sheena Jackson on Twitter, she says that this is one of the bleakest yet wonderfully done horror films of all time. It's one of the movies, one of those movies that sticks with you days after you've seen it. Absolutely agree with that. Previous guest on the show, Ash from the Kill the Dead podcast, she says Martyrs is her number one favourite foreign film. When she watches a film, doesn't matter what genre it is, I want to feel the emotions. I want to feel like I'm that character going through something, and Martyrs does it for me. Again, absolutely agree. Liam at the Movies says it's phenomenally grisly and disturbing, but the central idea behind the actions of the antagonist is too interesting and original for it to be discarded as mere torture porn. It's visceral and upsetting, but it is an excellent film. And I think that kind of sums up most of our conversation, doesn't it? The Repeat Offenders podcast says, great movie, the ambiguity of the ending drives me insane. And then finally, Silent D on Twitter says, it haunts your dreams, it stays with you long after you've watched it. So I think most people are in general agreement that this is actually an amazing movie, but this is hard to watch. So the last thing that I want to ask you before we sort of wrap things up and do our end housekeeping, did I oversell this film? Because I was really worried. I felt like I maybe oversold Eden Lake a little bit before we were going into that, and I didn't really want to do that with this film, but I feel I still was a bit worried that I'd maybe oversold it to you guys. So now that you've watched it and now that we've talked about it, did I oversell it to you guys?
I did pretty good for once.
Bitch. For once. I created this whole thing here. It's fine. It's fine.
You know I love you. I'm just being a shady lady.
I know. Bitch. Lindsay, what do you think?
No, I think you're pretty on the money. Like Henry said, it would be like quite depressing. But then at the same time, I still wasn't sure what to expect. I think yeah, you maybe oversold like Eden Lake a bit, but I feel like Eden Lake was a little, I don't know, paid by numbers, although I didn't really like that film very much. But this one, there was enough like twists and turns and stuff to keep you engaged. So yeah, no, I think you did a good job with this one.
Okay. Yay, I picked a good film. I've picked some fucking stinkers this year, so far. Friday the 13th Part 2, looking at you. Not pointing any fingers at any particular movies, Friday the 13th Part 2. However, I've probably still not been as bad as Lucy's picks, but that's okay.
I was just waiting for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we do that, so that's it then for this week's discussion. Lucy, it is your choice next week. You're back in the hosting hot seat next week. What are you making us watch?
Well, we're going to have a bit of lightheartedness after a very bleak movie. We're going into some kid movies over the next few weeks. And the first one's going to be my one, which is going to be Tim Burton's Frankenweenie. Which I think the both of you have seen.
I have not seen Frankenweenie.
Oh, have you not?
I have not. Oh, I've also not seen Lindsay's Choice the week after either, so that'll be interesting.
Ooh. Well, I do hope you like it, because I love it very much. I have a tattoo of one of the girls on it called Weird Girl with her kitty cat. And yeah, it's just a really nice kind of feel-good movie. It's very Tim Burton. I hope you guys enjoy it. It'll be a nice little break. It's something different we haven't really done.
It's very different from what we've been talking about today. Yeah. We were doing the scheduling for this sort of last month, because obviously last month was the sort of the Wiz the Women in Horror month. So we were moving some of our episodes around and things, and then I realized that I'd put these three films, you know, we've all picked like a more kid friendly movie, in the next 3 weeks, and I realized that I'd put Martyrs in just before the 3 weeks, and I wasn't sure whether to move it from that spot until later in the year or not, and then I decided, nah, fuck it, we'll just keep it. But yeah, back way when we did one of our live shows, we asked all of our listeners, you know, things that they would like to hear us review, and they says more sort of pre-1960s classics, which we will, our pre-1970s classic, sorry, and we've obviously done The Birds so far this year, but we've got more coming later in the year as well. And the other one was more sort of kid-friendly horror movies. We've obviously done The Addams Family, we've got The Addams Family Values coming up later this year, and we've also got these three episodes that we're about to be coming up as well. Three very different movies as well, despite the fact that, you know, they're all sort of more sort of PG kid-friendly horror movies, but I still feel like they're three very different movies. You know, we've got two animated, so we've got one live action, so it's going to be an interesting few weeks. I think I'm looking forward to it, but we've got a whole host more of other exciting movies coming as the year goes on. It's going to be good. Don't forget though, you can also check out our Sunday shows. Recently on our Sunday shows, we've had Candy and Sean, big friends of the podcast, at the House That Screams podcast. They were on to talk about Wrong Turn. The week before, we had Rob from the House That Screams podcast on to talk about Child's Play 2. Saved you guys from that one. So yeah, please go check out all of those. We've got some exciting Sunday shows coming up. We've had Nico coming back to the show to talk about The Midnight Meat Train starring Vinnie Jones. So that's going to be interesting. We've got whole host of returning guests. Ashlina's coming back to the podcast, Tony Shivers is coming back to the show, and a whole host of other guests returning as well, so keep an eye on that. You can follow us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram and YouTube's at Behind the Screams Podcast, patreon.com/behindthescreams, where you can sign up from as little as £1 a month to get much perks. That was good English. Much perks, things like early access to these shows, videos, bonus content. Our April Patreon review is going to be on Return to Oz, which is, I've been really excited about. I was actually potentially going to be saving that for a choice down the line for the main show, so that might come to the main show at some point in the future, but for now it's going to be Patreon exclusive. So that's our Patreon exclusive show for the month. Quick shout out before we get out of here to our Patreon subscribers. Big thanks to all of the following for parting with some of your really hard-earned pennies. We really appreciate every one of you. Thank you to Graham B, Lorna Pearl, Nico, the Girl That's Scary podcast, Coyote Wildfire, the TGIF podcast, Galileo, Boomer, Sophie H, Claire Lusher, Carrie J, Slayaway Radio, Lee, and Lee Brash. Thank you so, so much to all of you for supporting us. And of course, big shout out to our equal number one fan, Galileo. And big shout out to our other equal number one fan, Boomer. Thank you to you guys for all of the support that you give us. We really appreciate the both of you and everyone else on that list as well. Lindsay, where can people find you on the socials?
I'm at @HiIt'sLindsay_ on all social media.
Awesome. Lucy?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. It's Lulu_Pew.
Awesome. Yeah, all of please check the description. Like we said earlier in this episode, you'll have all of those links that we've just been talking about. You also got, like I said, got the timestamps, just so you know, for future episodes as well, will be in the description there. But until next time, thank you once again to Lindsay and Lucy for joining me on this week's show. Thank you to everyone at home for downloading and listening to this episode, and we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.